Every year, millions of people flock to complementary and alternative therapists offering a vast array of treatments ranging from acupuncture to biofeedback to urine injections. Millions more purchase over-the-counter alternative medications such as glucosamine, herbs, and homeopathic remedies. While consumer motivations for turning to complementary and alternative medicine, or CAM, may vary, there is one common element among them all: a belief in their effectiveness. This belief appears to be prevalent among all elements of society, from scientists and physicians to celebrities such as Prince Charles and Oprah Winfrey to clerical workers and senior citizens. On Sunday House Call, we focus on the scientific evidence to help us understand whether a treatment claim, be it for medications or alternative therapies, do what they purport. And if they do, what is the true mechanism of action behind it? And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. R. Barker Bossell, biostatistician and author, senior research methodologist in the Office of Research and professor, University of Maryland in Baltimore. He was research director of a National Institutes of Health-funded Complementary and Alternative Medicine Specialized Research Center, and he's author of that particular blurb that I read to you just earlier, author of Snake Oil Science, The Truth About Complementary and Alternative Medicine, The Science of Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
After that long introduction, I thought it was important to cover that because this book really does outline a guideline of how to approach claims, especially in our society where information abounds and misinformation abounds. And was this the specific purpose of the book, to really provide this framework?
Yes, it was. Another purpose was to attempt to evaluate sort of an entire field, if alternative therapies can be considered an entire field, and to assess whether or not they were indeed effective or ineffective.
Well, the book also reminds me of another one, like, for example, people like Carl Sagan, when he wrote his book, The Demon-Haunted World, and he alluded to the mistakes people make when faced with therapeutic claims. He actually created a kit called the Baloney Detection Kit to provide a critical thinking framework to evaluate the claims. And there are components in your book that remind me of this approach.
Well, thanks. Yes, to a certain extent, this touches on critical thinking. One of my purposes of writing the book was to sort of answer the question for myself, is let's say that my thesis, which I didn't start with, but my current thesis is that alternative therapies are really nothing more than cleverly disguised placebos. A question I was interested in investigating is, well, if that's true, how could so many otherwise intelligent people be wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And that touches, there are many, many answers to that question. That's a multifaceted question. So.
Well, and that leads to my next question, was what is the driving force that leads people to believe that a treatment from any milieu that they try has helped them? For example, is it a lack of skepticism? Or, you know, you hear about conspiracy theories and the and mistrust of pharmaceutical companies or medicine or physicians or just the overall medical establishment. How much of a role does that play, and how does that actually contribute to the outcomes that you're seeing?
Well, I think all those things are factors. I think we distrust, the pharmaceutical industry, probably in many cases validly. I think also it impacts the very basis of making inferential causal inferences. You know, did this affect that? And I think we're hardwired to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
to make certain inferences very quickly. I touched something hot, it burned, therefore the heat or the stove or the campfire caused the burn. But some inferences are much more difficult to make. And it's this type of inference. When we asked the question, I had pain, I went to an acupuncturist, the pain was resolved or reduced, was it the acupuncture or was it something else?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the book, I discuss a number of what I call inferential artifacts, things that conspire to sort of make fools of us all, and certainly conspire to make these inferences
now,
difficult to make.
Now, I believe that those inferences, though, are human nature derived, though, and not necessarily on the basis of lack of any intelligence, but just the way we're programmed to think.
Exactly, exactly. And actually, one, in my opinion, not being a historian, I'm not sure, but in my opinion, the very existence of these inferential artifacts is probably what gave rise to science to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what are some of the common assumptions that people have that confound outcomes of studies? Because you did sort of give an outline as to how studies should be performed and some of the errors that both the person doing the study, you used a fictional character, Dr. Smith,
right,
and you also then used a patient called Sarah in terms of trying to elucidate and demonstrate how the approach to research and the outcomes and the perceptions on the part of the patient can give results that really aren't necessarily true.
Right. I mean, these difficulties confound both patients, therapists, and scientists, especially poorly trained scientists. Just as an example,
mm-hmm.
Most people go seek alternative therapies not for a life-threatening disease like cancer or heart disease, but for chronic diseases. Diseases who have symptoms that wax and wane over time. Sometimes they're better, sometimes they're worse. People normally try an intervention when these symptoms are near their peak, if you think of it as a series of waves,
mm-hmm.
or normal curves, in which case they would naturally witness some improvement irrespective of any intervention. This I call, and other people sometimes call a natural history of the disease of the symptoms. You know. Other conditions resolve themselves. And speaking of Dr. Smith, if I could...
Yes.
We'll keep his name as Dr. Smith, but my internist, you know, has always sort of disliked me for some reason. So I thought, well, I'll curry some favor here and give him a copy of my book, you know.
Right.
The last time I went to see him. You know, I gave it to him and explained what it was about, and he was very gracious and appreciative, and he said, yeah, you know, but I believe in acupuncture. He said, I had something wrong with my heel, and I went to an orthopedist, and the orthopedist said, live with it. And mm-hmm. I tried something else. I tried medications. They didn't work. And finally, I tried acupuncture, and miracle upon miracle, the symptoms just totally went away, and I never felt any heel pain again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it may be that the acupuncture completely healed him, but as I say, some conditions resolve themselves, and if somebody keeps trying therapy A, therapy P, therapy C, therapy D, and try therapy E right before a condition resolves itself, you will never, ever convince that person that it was not therapy E that healed them. And so I think my intern still hates me. But anyway, they're just a plethora of these, and I don't want to go on all day, but I mean, another is cognitive dissonance, just
yeah.
plain old phenomena that I paid a lot for this medication. You know, nobody wants to be hoodwinked by anybody, so it must have helped.
Mm-hmm.
Another is, you know, belief is sort of contagious. Also, we tend to trust people that we like or our friends, And we hear them describe their experiences with a therapist. And, I mean, nothing ever gets lost in the telling of something. And then we get third-hand exaggerations
right.
and so on and so forth. And, of course, then the mother of them all is the placebo effect, which is a real honest-to-goodness symptom relief, especially for pain. So those are just a few of the things that can confound us. And if you're a therapist, which you are, I mean, to give another little story, when I was director of, you know, research director of the center, everybody kept asking me, I have a little chronic back pain, to go. This center specialized in investigating acupuncture. And so they said, you've got to try acupuncture for your back. So I went. The acupuncturist put a heat lamp on, stuck the little needles in, and actually the heat lamp felt very good. And so the session was over. The acupuncturist, who I was a friend with, said, well, how do you feel? I said, oh, it helped a lot. Well, that was a lie. My back still hurts. But it's just sort of politeness. I mean, this man was doing me a favor, was actually trying to do the best he could. And so I think patients, there's a certain extent, a certain number of patients will just sort of tell a therapist or a physician what they think the physician wants to hear. So... and the last one I bodied with, but there are really quite a few of these, is we have a tendency to try, and scientists are also guilty of this, but scientists are supposed to be more objective than the rest of us, but we have a tendency to try to confirm our beliefs rather than to question our beliefs, and so...
sort of a confirmation bias.
Right. And let me say one more, which I had never heard of until I began studying the placebo effect, and that is that our memories of even those of us that pride ourselves on our memories of seeing symptoms is not good. There was a study... conducted just on the placebo effect, not on alternative therapies, in which the researcher first laid the groundwork for got a baseline measure on people's pain tolerance before they laid the groundwork for a placebo effect, elicited the placebo effect, showed what usually happens. Baseline pain was greater than after the scientists told the patient that they were going to get a very effective medication. Then they gave them the exact same stimulus again, and, of course, their pain was less. Then these people, and it has been confirmed, these investigators, waited just a few minutes and then asked them, remember the pain you had before I gave you that effective medication? Could you tell me again, you know, rate that again for me? And strangely enough, they believed that the pain they had had before the medication was higher than what had actually been registered. So these things just go on forever. It's very difficult to make for people to make inferences about what worked on them personally.
So. We're in conversation with Dr. R. Barker Bossell, biostatistician and author. He's a senior research methodologist in the Office of Research and professor, University of Maryland in Baltimore, and author of Snake Oil Science, The Truth About Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And Dr. Bossell, I wanted to bring up, you mentioned a very interesting thing about placebo, and there was a recent study that compared, and they wanted to see the effect of the placebo effect, telling one group of people, this is for the treatment of, I believe it was for back pain, and they gave one group and told them this medication is $2 a pill, and they gave another group the same placebo, the same pill, the same Everything looked the same. It said it was a 10-cent pill. And wouldn't you know it, the one that was $2 worked better than the one that was 10 cents.
Yes, I read about that. You know, it was interesting. It's a little bit like the cognitive distance thing that I was discussing, except these people didn't actually pay it. But if they had paid it, the effect might have been charged $10. The effect might have been even greater. Who knows?
Well, now, does that go along with what you see in terms of the prices of some of the products that are being sold in the market, making claims for either pain relief or treatment of various diseases, and some of them are literally a fortune? Does that play a role in that person's decision-making, or at least response to that particular product?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that. I mean, it's complicated because of insurance. You know, sometimes we just pay. Of course, you have a different medical system up there and pay less for drugs up there than we do here, down here. But down here, if you have insurance, you pay the same regardless of the price. If you don't have insurance, you don't buy the medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure about that. I mean, there's no question that pharmaceutical prices are completely out of hand.
Yes,
but, you know, there have been a lot of studies on placebos, different colored placebos, injections versus pills. I'm not overwhelmed by the quality of some of that research, nor was I overwhelmed by the quality of the study you mentioned. There's speculation in the literature, not confirmed, I don't think, that things like surgery, because, of course, even effective therapies have placebo effects sort of confounded or interwoven within their actual biological effects. So it's been hypothesized that something like surgery in conventional medicine elicits one of the most powerful placebo effects, and procedural things like acupuncture or chiropractic also elicit more powerful placebo effects than something like an herb. But I think the jury's still out on those questions.
Now, you've also focused on how the placebo effect can confound test results, and you make clear how important it is to account for this by performing proper clinical trials. How, for the public to understand, how should these trials be conducted in order to take into account the effect of placebo?
Well, the evidence that I reviewed, I applied sort of a not particularly stringent quality screen, but, you know, certainly one that's defensible. Really, there are four issues, three more important than the fourth, probably, so are easier to apply. So as far as my thesis is concerned, naturally, it's got to have a credible placebo control group. That is, patients, participants, need to be randomly assigned to receive either the placebo or the alternative therapy, and they need, so that they don't know which therapy they're getting, okay? So that's difficult. That's very easy in something like homeopathy. It's just water anyway.
Mm-hmm.
For procedures, acupuncture, we've developed placebo acupuncture techniques that can fool some of the patients some of the time, at least. Now, the trouble with something like acupuncture, though, is the placebo effect can be elicited several ways. One, by having something performed upon you that you believe in, and two, what the therapist or the physician does. I mean, physicians have been knowingly and unknowingly enhancing the placebo effect for years. So the trouble with, say, an acupuncture or a chiropractic trial is that you can't blind the therapist as well. But anyway, a credible... So what that means, in effect, is all acupuncture trials or all chiropractic trials start off with a little positive boost in the results for the therapy and not the placebo. But anyway, the one criteria is a credible placebo. Another one is the size of the trial. If the size of the trial is like 10 or 12 patients or something, it's just not, it's just most of the time not credible. And so my screen was it needs to be at least 50 patients per group. So far, these are easy things for, I think, a consumer to evaluate him or herself. Three, also always reported, usually in the abstract, is you shouldn't, the scientists shouldn't lose half of their subjects before the trial's over, because those subjects that say, to heck with this, and leave are probably very different, are probably getting very different than the patients that remain. And so when I applied those three criteria to high-impact medical journals for about 7 or 8 years, I think, and since the book's published, there have been a couple more, so let's say there are 24, I found 24 trials, 23 of them, there was no difference between the CAM therapy and the placebo group. One study favored, I think it's green tea extract, which not coincidentally was funded by the company that that marketed this product, and even worse, was conducted by employees of that company, which is...
No conflict of interest there.
Yeah, some. And so those, I think, are the three main criteria. But equally important is, if I were advising someone who was sort of wanted to read a trial to evaluate it more, I would say probably the abstract, reading the abstract, is enough. Don't pay most attention to the method section. If it doesn't have a placebo group in it, ignore it. If it does have a placebo group in it, go, you know, and has a reasonable number of subjects, go to the results and then see, was there a statistically significant difference between the placebo and the therapy. Pay no attention. Do not read the author's discussion or conclusion, because you don't need to.
Right.
And, I mean, there was just a... recent, I'll say one more thing about this and then be quiet, but there was a recent study published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, a decent journal, in which it was sort of titled German Acupuncturist Group Finds That Acupuncture Helps Low Back Pain. So they had two controls, treatment as usual, which in my opinion is irrelevant, because that's not going to, treatment as usual is not going to elicit much of a placebo effect. Placebo acupuncture and acupuncture. And it found what all decently, because this was a well-conducted, I might say, trial.
Right.
It found what all these trials find. Both the placebo group and the acupuncture group were better than conventional care because it had all these factors we've already discussed going for it. There was no difference between the acupuncture and the placebo acupuncture. But then the Archives editorial staff let these authors go wild. And so they said, so what this says to us is there must be something very special about acupuncture. It doesn't even matter where we stick the needles, because the placebo needles were stuck at theoretically, you know, inactive points, not close to the meridians. And so, therefore, acupuncture is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Now I'm beginning to vary a little bit in language.
Mm-hmm.
And so that study got a lot of press indicating that acupuncture is good for low back pain. It's sort of like a pharmaceutical company finding no difference between a placebo and their drug, but since their placebo is made to smell, taste, and look like their drug, applying to the FDA, which is our regulatory institution down here for drugs,
right.
Applying to the FDA to let them market both the placebo and the their drug. So anyway.
My final question to you is, what has been the reaction to your book? And the reason I ask is that there are many that will reject the arguments in the book because of established worldviews. And I encountered this recently when someone asked me about the book I was reading, and we were talking about placebo effect, and they were an acupuncturist. And their argument was, well, if it helps you, if people are responding well to it, does it really matter?
Well, that's... you know, that's a very difficult question. At first, I thought it was a difficult question to answer. And when I wrote the book, I was thinking, well, what if what if somebody is benefiting from the placebo effect, and I burst their bubble? Is that really ethical on my part? And so after a little thought, though, I came up with the following sort of, I hope not rationalizations, but this is just my opinion. By marketing something that you know is a placebo effect and know that doesn't work, you know, this represents a product being sold under false pretenses, often to vulnerable populations. So in other commercial translations, this is called false advertising, a law of fraud, among other things. The second thing is, like the placebo effect, while quite impressive, is not what customers think they're buying, nor is it a cure. Placebos don't actually cure anything, just like alternative therapies don't. Their pain-relieving abilities are relatively weak, and their effects are relatively transitory. And some CAM therapies certainly aren't even selling this. They maintain their therapies a powerful cure-all. Some even claim that are capable of curing cancer, restoring cartilage ravaged by arthritis, read glucosamine, which doesn't. In effect, these claims go far beyond what can be expected of a placebo effect. And finally, from a personal perspective, I mean, I'm more interested in science, really, than people's use of these therapies. But it really raises my blood pressure when people evoke the name of science to say science or research has shown that when it hasn't. So that's, I guess, my answer to that question.
Well, Dr. Bosell, I'd like to thank you very much for taking all this time to discuss the book and also the effects of the placebo effect, and as well how research should be conducted, how people should interpret research and use a critical eye when looking at any claims, not just from alternative therapies, but also even claims from medications that are released and such,
right,
to really look for that information. I'd like to thank you very much.
I really want to thank you for having me, and your show certainly sounds interesting as you described it. So,
well, thank you, and all the best.
Okay, thank you.